the future seems to be in pharmaceuticals.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. For a time, drugs losing their patent protection and getting cheaper cut into medicine sales around the world. But according to a new forecast from the IMS Institute for Healthcare Informatics, spending on medicines will for the first time top $1 trillion next year. Some of this is new drugs on the way to help with such things as cystic fibrosis, but it's also the growing middle class overseas. The BBC's Celia Hatton in Beijing.
Global pharmaceutical companies have seized on the Chinese market as a place for growth, and they've really plowed into the Chinese market. Chinese people have embraced a lot of habits that go along with a Western lifestyle. So they're eating fattier food, they're smoking cigarettes, and that means that things like diabetes and lung cancer are on the rise, which means naturally they're going to want drugs to treat these illnesses. And while 20, 30 years ago they might have turned to Chinese medicines, increasingly they're turning to Western medicine.
Pharmaceutical companies had also been counting on U.S. healthcare reform to boost sales as people enroll in coverage and get better access to prescriptions. The industry is worried now that delays or rollbacks with Obamacare could cut into profits. We've been reporting throughout the fall on what could become the largest settlement ever between a corporation and the U.S. government. Sources tell the AP that J.P. Morgan Chase could agree as early as today to pay $13 billion for foisting lousy mortgage bonds on unwitting buyers. Part of that settlement could help pay for relief for some consumers struggling with unsustainable mortgages. Now let's check the numbers. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are mixed at the moment. The FT 100 in London is down 0.6%. Japan's Nikkei fell 0.25%. The electronics retailer Best Buy has a profit report on the way this morning. About a year ago, business reporters began to craft obituaries as the company seemed headed the way of Circuit City, bricks and mortar in an online world. But Best Buy's stock has soared this year. Marketplace's Mark Garrison reports.
Best Buy avoided death by cutting expenses, aggressively matching online prices, and improving its own website. Harvard retail professor Rajiv Lal says Wall Street likes it, for now.
The stock is flying sky high now, and the question really is, will there be another bump in the road?
That bump might even form in the road Best Buy built itself. It's gotten praise for new partnerships, allowing manufacturers to open flashy spaces inside its store. Morningstar analyst R.J. Hottovy says that's fine, up to a point.
By having Samsung and Microsoft store within stores, you potentially give them a blueprint to take products directly to consumers with their own stores down the road.
It's kind of like charging somebody to crash on your couch. You'll make a few extra bucks, but regret it if they steal your stuff and run off. Best Buy's next test is holiday shopping, and it's going all in. Most outlets open at 6 p.m. Thanksgiving Day, and will keep selling right through the night. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Now on to one of the great emotional and logistical challenges for baby boomers, caring for parents at a distance. There are the costs of travel and time missed from work, and then there's the worry and guilt when you can't be there for sick parents. As part of a series we're calling The New Healthcare Math, a joint collaboration between Marketplace and The New York Times, we hear Lou Ellen Barkin's personal story.
I'm Lou Ellen Barkin, and I'm the president and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association New York City chapter. The most interesting thing that's happened to me in the course of a fairly long career in three different industries, really, is that last few years when I became my own client, and I thought sitting here at the Alzheimer's Association as the CEO, I should surely be able to handle my own situation. And I was shocked, really shocked, to find out how vulnerable I was. And much of that was really associated with the fact that my mother and father had lived in Florida for many years. They had really made a life for themselves there. So it became imperative for me to travel back and forth to Florida to help my mom take care of my father originally when his Alzheimer's became a big issue. And later on when she became ill and had a stroke, I had to run back and forth to take care of her. It was extremely difficult. I'm 68 years old now. The year that this really started was around 1987. That year, my father had some surgery, and he was under the anesthetic for a fairly long time. And in the recovery period, we all noticed his memory was really very much impaired, and he seemed kind of spacey to all of us. He died in November of 2001, shortly after 9/11, in what was really surely one of the saddest months or years of my life. My mom, in that period, spent all of their resources caring for him. And so my brother and I have decided that we would share the expense for caring for my mother, but she didn't want to come back to New York. My parents' finances were very old-fashioned, meaning that I don't think my mother or father ever expected to live as long or need the kind of money they needed. What I've done for my children is to be very clear about what our wishes are. And the other thing we've done is we have not ever said to them the one thing you must never say to your children, which is you may never put me in a nursing home. We have families who say that, and the children feel immense guilt because they can't possibly take care of their parents on their own. I'm not sure what money's for, really. I used to say to them all the time when I was younger, life is for living and money is for spending. When you're dead, you won't have bills. And there's a real truth to that, unless you're sick. And the problem is that as we all live longer, the thing that my husband and I fear most is, you know, not dying and not running out of money, really. It's what we fear is that we're going to get sick and need somebody to take care of us. And having seen what that can do to somebody, that's really scary.
That's Lou Ellen Barkin in New York. The piece was produced by Kerry Donahue and at the New York Times, Paul Sullivan. You can read more about long-distance caregivers in tomorrow's Your Money section of the Times and on our website, marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.